Good evening, everyone. I'm Lee Normoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Well, get this. Experts say the United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says each day in the United States, approximately 9 people are killed and more than 1,000 injured in crashes that are reported to involve a distracted driver. And distractions increasingly include sending a text message and talking on the cell phone. A 2017 study in the Journal of the Association for Consumer Research found that student subjects who kept their smartphones on their desks rather than in a backpack or stashed in another room performed worse on tests of attention and cognitive processing. Health experts are sounding the alarm on the constant use of some tech devices and the loss of attention. The experts say while technology has improved many aspects of modern life, such as more access to information and improved medical care, being overly connected can cause psychological issues, one of which is distraction and even depression. Well, joining us from our VOA studio in New York City for more on the subject is Maggie Jackson. She is an award-winning author and journalist known for her writings on social trends, particularly technology's impact on humanity. She recently released the book Distracted, Reclaiming Our Focus in a World of Lost Attention. Maggie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's so good to have you. Listen, distraction and technology, it's really a subject that we experience to some extent every day, but we don't really think about. What prompted you to turn to that subject for a book?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I was beginning to see the beginnings of a struggle. Even years ago, I was beginning to see how technology changed our lives, you know, how it intruded into the space between two people, how it changed family life, and parents were frustrated by not knowing what their kids were doing online. And so I began to dig around and try to understand how technologies have shaped humanity throughout the ages and see whether or not, what we were headed for, what were going to be the upsides and the downsides. We're still trying to get a handle on this. Mm-hmm. And we've been trying ever since the age of the telegraph and the train and the bicycle and then the computer and now the iPhone and the smartphone. So we are struggling while we're in the midst of this enormous revolution.
Yes, and from the telegraph to the smartphone, a lot has happened in between. So when we look at the way people are relating or people's relationship to technology, what do you make of it? I mean, clearly it is something that is of concern, otherwise you wouldn't have turned to the subject. So what is your take on it?
Well, I think that, these tools were introduced with great fanfare, great hopes. You know, they would connect us to people all over the world, which they have. They would kind of solve so many problems of humanity. They would make instant information instant. You know, they would allow us to guide ourselves around strange places, etc. You know, but now people are extremely disappointed. A backlash is arising, not only in the United States, but in many parts of the world, about kind of I call it the broken promises of the digital age. Oh. And one of them is, what has happened to our attention? You know, in a lot of ways, it's ironic that scientists didn't even know what attention was. They didn't think it could be studied until just about a decade or two ago. But then the fact that technology and devices interrupted and broke and squandered and changed how we pay attention has actually put the study of attention on the map. So we now understand, in a sense, what we're missing, because attention is, who you are as a human being, what you attend to, how you attend, whether you can do it well and in a sustained fashion actually is tantamount to your success as a human being and to human flourishing. So at the moment, I think we have extremely serious problems related to distraction and attention and technology. And I have to say, technology is not the only, you know, devil here or the only problem, but technology has had such a enormous impact on our minds and our relationships and our neighborhoods, etc., that we can't really talk about distraction today without really trying to get a handle on technology. So at the moment, I see people really struggling, torn. 70% of Americans say that they are that they think technology is making us lazy and distracted. And yet another 70%, a majority of Americans also say technology has improved their lives. You know, we're both living the benefits and we're also struggling with the excess because with the penetration of these devices into our life, there's no moment, you know, when people are away from them. It's become, you know, the de facto kind of cognitive prosthetic, I call it, the extension of the mind. It is your memory. People can't really even walk around a strange neighborhood without, you know, feeling like they have to turn to GPS. Mm-hmm. And all of this truly changes who we are as human beings. In fact, I think it's, you know, it has the risk of, you know, basically making us lesser human beings in so many ways. Just for instance, the always-on nature of these devices, you know, that leads to, even if you don't look at the kind of cluttered, hyperlinked nature of the content that you're looking at, and that interrupts us, then there's also the, you know, notifications and the desire, the fear of missing out. So the people are constantly interrupted. And as far as their health is concerned, that leads to this kind of low-level vigilance that's demanded at all times, night and day. You know, the interrupt nature of work has led to stress, high levels of stress and frustration, scientists show. People are interrupted at work every 3 minutes. So there's that level of just not really having enough time to have a fully formed thought or to have a conversation that, you know, unfolds between two people that gets you to kind of a deeper level of understanding. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the mistrust and distrust that we have online and offline now, you know, is related very much to these very brief and interrupt-driven conversations, you know. Mm-hmm. So even in just, let me just adding one more impact of technology, even having a smartphone in your presence, although it's turned off, you're not really actually getting any active interruptions at that moment, lowers people's cognitive reasoning, fluid reasoning, their ability to solve new problems, as well as lowering their focus. So these are absolutely extraordinarily powerful devices.
Interesting, even when the device is off. So what kind of, in terms of your research, because you've conducted so much research to come to these findings and conclusions, so how do we, what kind of research have you come across to kind of prove the fact that even though a device may be turned off, people's attention or maybe their cognitive ability is being reduced?
Well, these are studies by a scientist named Adrian Ward out of the University of Texas, and he's done many series of studies and many years of research showing, you know, how technology changes us. And one of his, some of his recent work has done just that, show that, you know, when he gives people tests of cognitive reasoning and fluid reasoning, and he tests their attentional abilities, and when they're allowed to have their phone on the table, even though it's turned off, they do, you know, less well. If they have the phone in their backpack or their purse, it's out of sight, they do a little bit better. But they do best of all on these tests of cognitive reasoning if the phone is out of the room altogether. And as you mentioned, this is a huge issue for students because they have their smartphones, they put them on vibrate or, you know, hear it ringing. It's interrupting their ability to focus on the professor or on their studies. And one of the most interesting aspects of this whole issue of distraction, which, you know, really is an issue of multitasking, is that we're also, scientists are beginning to find out the long-term costs. So, for instance, if you have people who are living this day to day, you know, who are immersed in these kind of interruptive technologies, they begin to be less able to tell what's important in their environment. Again, these are laboratory studies that show that people can't tell what's an important thing, in a test and what's less important. They can't really filter or siphon out less important things. And that makes sense. Juggling these devices, being constantly interrupted, is kind of like looking at life through the window of a speeding train. You know, you can't really tell. You have to slow down and look carefully and understand and think about things if you're going to say, well, that's the most important project in my workday today. Or my teenage son told me that, but I think he's really saying this. That takes time and it takes focus. And that's really, you know, very important. People also who multitask and are distracted all the time, that, you know, this is their by self-report how much they, have these kind of behaviors. They also have a more shallow memory for what they're learning. In other words, your brain can't digest. If you're listening to a lecture or a speech at a work conference or even your spouse in the kitchen one night and you're interrupting yourself or checking your phone, you're not really, your brain can't, you know, keep up with what's going on. And so you're going to have less of a memory for that. You're also going to have memories that are less connected, which is a sort of, building block of wisdom. So this is why professors tell me that when the kid, you know, their students are sort of not paying attention in class and texting, etc., during the first fall term, and they come back in the spring, it's as if they hadn't even taken the first half of the class.
Wow, that's very, I mean, it's disturbing.
It's alarming.
It's alarming, yes. That's a better word, actually, because, I mean, what people go to school, children go to school to learn. If you cannot keep your focus on what is being said, or even if you can, remember what is being said, but you do not remember long term, you do not retain it, that's a serious problem. But Maggie, how do we put the responsibility in terms of the way people are to use these devices? Because it is true, I remember growing up, I did not have a cell phone. There was no cell phone at that time. I remember we had a phone at home. We had, several phones, but it was one line. You have a phone in the kitchen, in the parents' bedroom and living room and so on and so forth. However, we were living just fine. We were surviving, and this was not just something about my home. It was worldwide. There was no cell phone at that time. So what has happened? What gives these devices such a stronghold on us?
Well, that's a great question. And I think there are two reasons why they have such a strong hold on us. You know, first of all, they're designed that way. In the last year, we've begun to hear stories about technology companies and how they actually design the software and the machines themselves as if we are gamblers and they're trying to hook us on these devices. So, you know, it's called brain hacking. And, Tristan Harris, who is a person who left Google, has done a lot of talking about this. How when you finish watching a YouTube video, you know, you automatically get the next one on the screen. And same with Netflix, watching a movie. And there's so many different ways in which they, you know, are alluring because they speak to the human desire, the psychological desire for novelty. You know, people love the new and the shiny, etc. They have constant movement. They're just designed to hook us. So that's really important. What I don't believe, and I think it's really important, is what some of the techno skeptics are saying, is that, you know, we can't do anything about it. You know, the smartest minds in the world, supposedly, are designing these devices to hook us, and that's just, you know, we can't do anything about it. I don't agree at all. I really think that the second half of the equation, you know, A, we need to wake up to technology. We need to push back on this. And in fact, global bodies of design standards are beginning to make new rules to try to, you know, regulate even the ethics and morality of designing machines that hook children and then make people addicted to their phones. I think this is a very important step. The second step, and you asked about responsibility, is ours, our responsibility. And I would put it in a very positive light. We have a responsibility to be the best humans we can be, to flourish. And I think, unfortunately, since the mid-20th century, actually, we've been sort of, or even actually into the 19th century, we've been kind of thinking of the machine as the answer. The machine is faster. The machine is better. The machine can outwit us. It can do chess problems. Well, that doesn't mean humans aren't, you know, as smart in different ways, and our humanity, you know, is extremely, brilliant. We need to have faith in the human mind, and that will take some important steps. But, you know, that's another piece of awareness we need to have when we educate children to be skeptical about devices, mm-hmm. or to take a pause break in the middle of their homework and just, you know, let themselves reflect on what they're learning. That has been scientifically shown to make you learn better, and mm-hmm. the learning lasts longer.
And we will talk more about some of the steps that we can take to address these challenges. I want to ask you this question, because for me, I find it a bit, I won't say anything about that, because I don't want parents to start sending me emails and things like that. But, you know, I see that in some context, when a kid is maybe throwing a tantrum or is bored or, you know, whatever the case might be, their parents will give him a phone or her a phone, even a baby a phone to play with. A toddler will get a phone and then they will start behaving themselves. But when we were kids, we didn't have phones. So earlier we mentioned responsibility. So what do we do that? Whose responsibility? Isn't it the parent's responsibility to, you know, educate the child?
Yes, I truly agree. I think there's a time and place for any of these devices. And just as people, you know, plonked their children in front of the television, you know, in order to get a break as parents, or, you know, in order to have a grown-up dinner, you know, just as that has happened, or sent kids to the movies just to get them out of the house mm-hmm. on a rainy day. Sure, our technologies have a place for entertainment. They have a place for learning, especially visual learning, etc. But I think you're right that, you know, when technology is seen as the answer to boredom,
yes.
and when technology, if you think about it, technology is abducting not just our attention, but our minds into worlds that other people have made. They're a very specific type of world. It's a world of boxes and ticking off the boxes. It's a world of controlled outcomes in video games. This is not life. Mm-hmm. And life, you know, demands that we learn, and you know, creative life anyhow, you know, is predicated on daydreaming sometimes. And learning, as I mentioned, is based on sometimes reflecting on what you're doing just so you can digest it. So I think parents have a real responsibility, and I think that they are waking up to that. A lot of parents are very torn. I was just talking with many different parents as part of my reporting. They are, particularly mothers, are extremely upset about the fact that the family life is just, you know, four people or however many people on devices, not mm-hmm. paying attention to one another. And while there are some parents who still think it's a great idea just to give the iPad to the child, I think that the others are waking up to the fact that this is not right. You know, when social life and the growing of a young mind and the growth of a young, you know, loving human takes years and years. You know, we need to develop something that's called joint attention, which babies begin to wake up to at about 18 months. And that is that they can pay attention to, say, a toy or an apple in their environment, but that they know at that point that they are paying attention with another. You know, the mother and the child can converse about the toy, but the idea is that joint attention occurs when they both know that they're paying attention together. Mm-hmm. Sounds simple, but yeah. That is one of the biggest bedrock bases of human connection, of having, you know, the ability to understand one another. And so if we're constantly fracturing or not even having those moments of joint attention, we're really sabotaging the ability to be humans who make the effort. And the other thing about technology, and again, I'm not against it. It's fantastic for my research. I use a smartphone all the time.
It's not about putting the technology away. It's just about maybe retraining ourselves to better use it as opposed to being victims of it, if you
exactly.
will.
Exactly. Drawing, not giving control over to the device, not thinking that that Google has the answer when maybe you do in mm-hmm. your mind, or maybe the mystery is something that we need to sit with. You know, these are really, really important facets of humanity that I think are being sidelined, being yes. shelved by yes. this.
Maggie, let's take a short break for the news, and we'll come back and continue and wrap the discussion. Very, very interesting talking to you. We'll be right back with Maggie Jackson on technology and distraction. But first, the news with Bonsa Tufa.
Thank you, Lenore. People who sleep less than 6 hours a night might have an increased risk of cardiovascular disease compared to those who sleep 7 to 8 hours. That's according to a new study published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. Researchers tracked around 4,000 Spanish adults using coronary ultrasound and CT scans to monitor artery health. Participants did not have a prior history of heart disease at the start of the study and had an average age of 46. The study found that chronic lack of sleep or poor sleep quality were associated with increased chances of atherosclerosis, a condition where fatty plaque accumulates in the arteries, which can lead to heart attack or stroke. Global health teams battling the world's second largest Ebola epidemic in the Democratic Republic of Congo fear an election dispute may deepen public mistrust and allow the epidemic to run out of control. Already, 385 people have been killed in the outbreak of Ebola in East Congo that began 6 months ago and has infected at least 630 people. That's according to the World Health Organization's data. There are some signs that case numbers in the North Kivu city of Beni may be leveling off, but the World Health Organization experts are cautious. The World Health Organization says the risk of the disease spreading remains very high at national and regional levels and is working urgently with Congo and its neighbors, Uganda, Rwanda, and South Sudan, to do everything to avoid that happening again. Researchers in the United Kingdom have developed what they say is potentially a game-changing test to predict a woman's risk of breast cancer. It combines information on family history and hundreds of genetic markers with other factors, such as weight, to give the most comprehensive assessment possible, says Cancer Research UK. The test is not yet routinely available and currently being tested. It is part of a push to spot cancers earlier through tailored screening. The researchers say women at high risk could be given preventative treatments or offered more checks. The test, which also assesses ovarian cancer risks, is described in the journal Genetics in Medicine. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
Thank you, Bonsa, and welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing technology and being distracted, really, to sum it up. Our guest is Maggie Jackson. She's an award-winning author and journalist known for her writings on social trends, particularly technology's impact on humanity. And she recently released the book Distracted, Reclaiming Our Focus in a World of Lost Attention. So let me toss this back to you, Maggie. How do we reclaim our focus in a world of lost attention, to quote your book?
Well, yeah, great. Thank you. And I think it's very important, first of all, to say that small steps do matter. I came from a background of writing about work-life balance, and one of the things we learned about struggling with how women and mothers and fathers and people, you know, balance their work and life is that, you know, small steps matter. Sometimes all someone needs in terms of flexibility is to go home on a Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock to watch watch their kids' baseball game. So I think that we don't have to worry so much about, you know, whether we throw all the devices away or, you know, how we can possibly change our kids' behavior without hurting their success in the future. I think that we need to start having conversations and start taking steps. One of the most important things is to just redraw boundaries. You know, say redraw boundaries were kind of used to seem, you know, part of life. You know, home was home and work was work, and you know, female roles were that and male roles were that. Well, that for better or worse, we've torn down boundaries so that life is sort of this one constant stream of work and connection, etc. Boundaries are very, very important for both children and for adults as we go, you know, to try to recapture our focus. Because you can think of, scientists actually call focus a spotlight of the mind. It's a kind of boundary. It decides what you're focusing on and what you're not. What is the distraction? What is the center of your attention? So for instance, you know, maybe 6 to 8 p.m. or 6 to 7 p.m. is the family tech-free hour. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a boundary making. Or you can use physical boundaries of space. You know, put the phone in the trunk of your car or in the way back seat so you're not tempted to text and risk your life doing that kind of thing. You know, teach children how to decide what kinds of homework they need to be doing, with full focus and attention, and what kinds of homework they can then sort of chat with their friends about. You know, different projects demand different things. Same with adults at work. So I think that's the first type of change we can make. Mm-hmm. Second of all, I think that it's really important not to kind of take this for granted. You know, that we need to kind of wake up to what's becoming normal, and you know, the idea of the phone on the dinner table or the phone on the restaurant table. We talked in the earlier part of the show about how that really does lower focus. It makes people actually having a phone around is the biggest predictor of having a less of a good time at a face-to-face kind of event. So if you're at a family dinner, you've got phones around, people are actually having not as good a time as if the phone was completely away. So this is really important to just look carefully at what's being normalized. It's normal to carry it around. It's normal. It used to be considered a little rude to pick up your phone in the middle of a dinner, as happened to me last Friday night. You know, I'm having a great dinner with a couple of friends, and the husband wanted to know something about the movie that I had just mentioned seeing, and so he then sort of went off his phone, but not for a minute, for minute after minute after minute. I thought to myself, you know, how many times in my lifespan will we ever be having this dinner? Actually, not that many, even their close friends. Isn't it worth just being present for the conversation? So, you know, just as the electric light changed our sleep patterns across the world, but we now take it so much for granted, I think it's really important to, you know, wake up to what the phone's doing. Ask yourself and your kids, hey, is it better when we do it this way, when we Google an answer? Or is it maybe better at the dinner table to just kind of all pause and say, what do you think the answer is? And go around the table to the whatever the mystery, or, you know, why the stars are shining this way tonight, or what is a full moon mean? And these kinds of questions.
Okay.
Let's pause.
Okay, Maggie. There's so much more we should talk about, but unfortunately, time is up. We have to leave it there. It was such a pleasure to have you on the show today. And the takeaway from me is, you know, technology is here to stay. We can't get rid of all the distraction, but what we can do is to improve our ability to filter it and set boundaries, right? So
exactly.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Maggie.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And stay focused, everyone.
Yes. Let's all stay focused. It's a new year, right?
Yes.
And that's all the time we have. We thank our guest, Maggie Jackson, who is the award-winning author. author and journalist and author of the book Distraction. And I thank all of you for joining us. The book is rather Distracted, Reclaiming Our Focus in a World of Lost Attention. That's the correct name of it. You can look it up on Google, Amazon, and everything. For more on the show, check us out on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. And thanks to all of you, our affiliates, for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou, in Washington, with producer Bonsatufa and engineer Cornelius. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA News. I'm Liz Pelka. An upscale